Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, this message is entitled The Power of Living a Focused Life. And I want to kind of go way back into the very beginning of things. There's this video online of this. I think he's like a president of some African nation, but he's starting to read the Bible and like starting in verse one, and it's so hard for. I mean, give the guy props because he's reading it in English, probably not his first language, but he's struggling on the word beginning, and it is so funny. He's like reading and he's like in the beninging. Oh my gosh! And he goes for like 5 minutes. It is so funny. I was maybe going that way, but I'll just talk about it instead of doing it. So in the beginning, God created the world. He created the universe with purpose. He initiated creation with a purpose. It was not just haphazard. It was not a response to some spontaneous event that we're living in the afterglow of. God had a plan, and there was a beginning to it. And right now, we're living right somewhere in the middle of God's plan of creation, of God's will. God has intentions. He has preferences. He has a will. He has things that he wants to happen, and he set those things in motion. But more than just set it in motion and then let it play out, he's actively involved in our lives and wants to be more so, as much as we would allow him to. And so God, in his infinite wisdom and his infinite power, instituted light out of the darkness. He gave order in the midst of chaos and nothingness. And he established a kingdom that we get to be a part of. And even before Adam breathed his first breath, God was intending things to go a certain way. I want to read us a verse in Ephesians 1, 9. There's actually going to be so much coming out of the first chapter of Ephesians 1 today, just because it talks so much about God's will. And that's really what we're going to be looking at, is God's will and how our lives can play into that. And more than just play into it, how we can participate and agree with God's will for our lives. In Ephesians 1, 9, Paul is talking to the church of Ephesus, and he says, there's this amazing plan. It's a mystery, this plan that God has for the world, for creation, but also for your lives. And he begins to unpack it in this passage of how it played out. He says this, having made known to us the mystery of his will, according to his good pleasure, which he purposed in himself, that in the dispensation of the fullness of times, he might gather together in one all things in Christ, both which are in heaven and which are on earth in him. Now, if we read over this in just a glance and really just pass over it, there's so much in here. And even intentionally studying, there's so much to unpack. I want to just start from the beginning here in verse 9 and kind of start to unpack this. So there's a will that God has, and it has not just been openly disclosed. It's not openly available, but he does make known to us the mystery of his will. So there's this bit of unknown in his will that he makes known to us. And the thing that I love about it is, when we think about a will, one of the things that growing up in a military household, there is this thing about a father's will that when he wants it done, it's going to get done. And it doesn't always get done with the tender kindness that you may expect out of a father. But in a military household, and for any of you who are familiar with at least a clip out of a movie with somebody who's in charge in the military, you know that there's a will that goes forward, and it's normally by force. It's normally by inserting the intentions and the will of that sergeant or that person who's wanting to have their thing get done. But I love this, the way that Paul describes it, according to his good pleasure in which he purposed in himself. It really gives us the feeling and the idea that God has a will and that it's his good pleasure. Whatever this will is going to be unfolded, whatever is going to be talked about in the next following verses, there's going to be a will, and it's something that he has in his heart that he's all excited to give. He's all excited to have unfold. And it's such a master plan. It's a masterful orchestration of so many events and so many things coming together. And it makes him happy. It's his good pleasure. It's according to his good pleasure that he purposed in himself that when everything comes together in the dispensation of the fullness of times, here's what would happen. That he would gather together in one all things in Christ, that he would be able to hand his son, Jesus, this thing, and that thing is all of Jews and Gentiles, male and female, all of humanity that would love him as an offering to Jesus for the purpose of Jesus leading. So he's going to bring all things in heaven and earth, not just those that would love him, but he's bringing creation together. He's bringing the whole, all of the kingdoms, the whole of humanity into this one big present for his son, and he's going to give it. This is the overarching big picture. This is a major part of God's will, that from the very beginning, God's creation, he intended to give his son a gift, and that is everything altogether for his plan and for his purpose, so that Jesus would be able to lead. So he has a will, and we see in this, and we can even infer that God has, he has preferences. He has a way that he likes things to go. There are certain things. If you go into, I love the picture of somebody. I'm trying to think of where I saw it last, but there's this kind of trope that gets repeated in a lot of different movies and stuff of the kid going to touch the thermostat, and dad has a preference, and you don't touch that thermostat. And God has preferences. He has the way that he likes it is how he likes it, and he wants things to happen and go that way. And so God is the leader of a kingdom. Not only is he the Lord of creation, but he's the leader of a kingdom. We know that God created all of creation and gives creation its power. The reason that we have breath in our lungs, the reason that we have blood pumping in our hearts and through our veins is because of the power that God gave us. But there's also limitations. There's also limitations that he set within our own bodies. There's things that we can and can't do. But there's power and limitations that he's put in place in creation. You think about the power of a massive tidal wave or some tsunami that can just obliterate things in its strength and in its power. You think about the strength of different things in creation. I mean, seismic events of earthquakes and volcanoes, just a sheer power of creation. You think about the strength that is contained within powerful animals and things like that. But there are also limits. The Lord has set limits in place. So he really has the ability to give both power and limitation. Now, within those two things, with the power to do things, but then also the limits, there's actually a lot of liberty that we have to do, to live, to express our lives and for creation to go on. But like I said just a moment ago, God has a will and God has a purpose. He has preferences. He has a kingdom that he's wanting to bring forward. Now, the thing that is maybe not obvious is we can unwittingly just live, and I don't mean necessarily just aimlessly and kind of going around like a Mr. Magoo type character, but you can go and live your life according to the things that you think would be best, according to conventional wisdom, which isn't always necessarily bad, but according to the things and the preferences that you have, according to your will, and actually be contrary to what God has intended. Maybe something that God has intended for a city, maybe something that God has intended for your family or for your specific life. But we can also, on the flip side, we can intentionally get God's perspective, get God's will for our lives, and then participate. We can agree with what God has for our lives. We can find out from the Lord, what do you want from me in my life or in this season, and how can I agree with that? How can I put myself in a position and look at the different circumstances, and what can I do according to all the strength that I have? How can I put myself in the way of agreeing with you? I want to partner with the Lord in what he wants for my life, for my family, for my city. And so what we're going to be looking at here in just a moment is how we can intentionally find out from the Lord, and primarily through the Bible, how can we partner with God? How can we participate? I was thinking about this concept, and I think that there is, I was actually listening to this sermon on the radio, and it was using so much of the language that is just so motivating to go out and win souls for the kingdom. And one of the things that is said so commonly is to be used by the Lord. And I know that the Lord uses people. But one of the things that I was kind of feeling as that phrase is spoken as being used by the Lord is, I feel like as a dad myself, if I want something done in my house, say I need something picked up, I don't know that I've ever thought I'm going to use one of my kids to do this. What I typically think is I want to get my kid to do this with me or for me. And there's this dynamic of relationship that I'd like for us to refocus into partnering with what God has to do. Yes, we get to be used of God, but I don't know that the Lord would preference to be used by God in such a way that just sounds kind of devoid of relationship. So anyway, all that to say, relationship is such a major component of God's will to get his stuff done. If it wasn't, he could just do the snap of the finger and make it done, make it happen. But he doesn't do that. I saw a quote recently that said, God's kingdom moves at the speed or the pace of relationship. And what that basically means is, in the context of relationship, God is accomplishing his will, and he is so content to let it happen at the pace of decades and centuries and generations, as opposed to, hey, I need this thing done, let's get it done. And that is such a shift from our American mindset of, we've got every second and every minute ticked on the clock to know when this is supposed to happen, and we've got it to be able to move at such a pace. But the Lord is so not that. He has a timing, and in his timing things happen. And not to say that the Lord is just so lax or laissez-faire about something, but he's got a will, and he is willing to let it be done in a pace that is many times unnerving to us, because he speaks a thing and it takes a decade to happen, where we're thinking like 10 minutes, let's get this thing done. And that's just how the Lord is. That's how his kingdom runs. Here in Ephesians 1:17, I want to highlight the fact that God has intended for his son, Jesus, to rule as leader of this kingdom, and that we have the ability to partner with it or actually kind of stand in the way. So here in Ephesians 1:17 and then verse 22, it says, and that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, this is a prayer that Paul is praying for the Ephesians, the Father of glory may give to you the spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of him, that the eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that you would know the hope of his calling. And he put all things under his feet and gave him to be head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. Now here in this first verse 17, I want to highlight something that may not be just sticking out, but I think is kind of important for us to recognize whenever Paul is praying this, that we would have the spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of him, the eyes of our understanding being enlightened. Why? That we would know the hope of his calling, to know that the Lord is the Lord of all, to know that he's the king of this kingdom. And I really think that one of the implications of this is that we know who's boss so that we don't try and usurp his throne and put ourselves as our own kings and our own bosses in place of him. He wants our eyes to be open to know that God has placed Jesus as the leader of this kingdom and that he's the one who's going to be calling the shots. Him to be head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. And what I see this meaning in this specific context is that God has this plan. He's put Jesus as the leader to do it, and he wants us to be on board with what he's doing and to be cognizant, to be aware, and to be agreeing with what he's doing so that we don't get in the way and so that we can actively participate in what he's doing. We know that God has a general will. He has an overarching will. We've talked a little bit about that. But there's also things that are specifics for our lives, specific for our family, specific for our city and for our nation. And one of the things that I love, so many times I find myself, and you may have found yourself in this position too, I find myself, some event or some season comes to a close, something happens, and I look back on it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was God. That was the Lord. And unwittingly, unknowingly, I kind of stumbled forward. I was just doing my life. I was just doing my thing. And there's indicators, something happens, and it's like those were the fingerprints of God all over that. I can just so clearly see that was the Lord. And I love that in his mercy, he allows us to stumble forward in those things and just in his grace to be a part of his kingdom in that way. And it's like, I just participated with God's will unknowingly. And there's this amazing blessing. Somebody comes to know the Lord. Somebody's encouraged. Something amazing happens. Some breakthrough happens. And we realize those things in hindsight. But there's actually a way to have that happen more often. And we can position ourselves in such a way, it's possible for us to be informed, more informed, and then to strategically partner with him, to agree with his will. And we can have clarity in the word, we can have clarity for his will, and we can have sensitivity to his leading. One of the things that I've just been praying so often here recently is, Lord, let me feel your leading. Give me the sensitivity to your leading so that I can be doing something and I've got that reassurance, that confidence of knowing I'm doing this because it's the Lord's will. You have me doing this. It's right to do this. And that just gives me confidence because many times, if we're honest, the circumstances all around us are saying, this is a waste of your time. You could be doing so many more things. You could be doing so just other things, not even more helpful things, just something that's more entertaining or something that's more beneficial in the immediate. But one of the things that we take confidence in is that we're not just doing this life for the now. We're not just doing it for the immediate and for the temporal. We're doing it for eternity. We're doing it for our eternal treasures, for an inheritance that the Lord has for us. I want to look here in Colossians 1:9. This is one of my favorite prayers that can be found in the New Testament just because it so clearly lines out the ability to know his will and to not only stumble. I don't think we'll ever get out of stumbling into the God, into the Lord's will, because we can't know everything. We only can know in part. But the things that we can know, we can act on. here in Colossians 1, 9, it's another prayer that Paul prays for the church, this time for the church of the Colossians. He says, I'm praying for you guys that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Now, those phrases are just nuggets in and of themselves that you can meditate on and have an amazing time of reassurance of God's will for your life in general. But there are some specifics that we can tap into here that if we would take the time, the Lord says that if we seek him, we'll find him. That if we ask, he'll answer. That if we knock, he'll open the door. And so these things can be known. And even more specifically, this prayer makes it obvious that it's possible to know and to be filled with the knowledge of his will. That we can have wisdom and understanding. We can have spiritual understanding in certain matters. What that basically equates to is in the midst of all our circumstances, in our jobs, in our families, and out in the community, in the church, all of the different circumstances and the settings that we find ourselves in, there's so many moving parts, so many variables, so many different things happening all at once that we can have the ability to see through all of it and be able to discern what the Lord is doing and to be able to see the things that the Lord is highlighting and then to be able to agree with it. So many times, it's just information overload. If you allow your senses to just take everything in, it is overwhelming. It is absolutely overwhelming. But we have the ability to have spiritual wisdom, to have spiritual understanding, so that for the very reason of not just having the information, but that we would walk worthy of the Lord and be fully pleasing and be fruitful in every good work. I don't know about you guys, but I want every work that I put my hands to be fruitful. I want to always just have that favor of the Lord in the things that I do, in the way that I'm raising my kids, in the way that I'm setting the tone and the culture in my home, in the way that I'm available out in community, in the way that I'm in the workplace, in the way that I'm doing ministry. I want to have the blessing of God, the favor of God, the fruitfulness that comes of being in his will. One of the things that I have found that is, I don't know what the best word is, but I find it like, really, Lord? That's a thing like that we can go, we have the ability to go and move to whatever city we want. We have the liberty to go and pick whatever job we want, and we can go and make our own life, basically, even as those that love the Lord. And we work for those things, and we do those things, and the Lord loves us, and all of those things can be great, but that there's actually a way, and that may be the way that the Lord had for us, but there might be a different way that if we would have been intentional to even just pray, Lord, is this what you have for me in this season? Is this place? Is this occupation? Is this thing that I'm doing right now in this season or long term? Is this your will? And that the Lord would give the peace, give an answer or a confirmation, and that we could do this whole other version of life that would be different from what we would have chosen, and it be better. That's crazy to me. Like, Lord, you allow so many different versions of life that we can just do whatever. I wouldn't do that. I'm not God, I know, but I wouldn't do that. I would probably give like maybe a choice of like, you could do this one and it's good, and then this one's the best. But God gives the whole spectrum of you can completely go off the rails and do this random thing. I mean, I'm thinking of even the story of Jonah. Jonah had the liberty to completely disobey the Lord. And I'm not even talking about just overt disobedience, but just different from what the Lord would have for us in this season. We can have the ability to walk in his will, to walk in in the purpose that he has for our lives. There's tremendous power available to us if we would partner with God in an intentional way. If we set ourselves to be filled with the spirit of wisdom and revelation and for our eyes to be enlightened. Here in Ephesians 1:19, this is the middle part of some of the verses that we've already been reading. Paul begins to talk about we want to be enlightened so that we know that God is in charge. He's put Jesus on the throne. And then here in verse 19, the extension of that, he says, there is exceeding greatness of his power toward us who believe according to the working of his mighty power. When we put ourselves in line with what the Lord is doing and put ourselves not at the head, but put ourselves in submission to the Lord's will, he releases exceeding great power toward us who believe according to the working of his mighty power. So there's an amazing amount of power. And this really is the power of living a focused life, living in submission, living in alignment to what the Lord has. I want to talk just a moment about this idea of being at the very end of our lives, when the Lord returns or when we go to meet him, that we have this evaluation. We stand before the Lord and there's this evaluation of our lives. And there's this illustration in Luke 12 that I want to just highlight to talk about the idea of this evaluation. We have this amazing opportunity to not only know his will, but to be ready and participate with his plan of bringing not only our life into alignment, but also bringing his kingdom to the earth in a greater way. We have the ability to partner with God and bring his plan to fruition, his kingdom more to the earth. And there's a blessing that Jesus spoke and prophesied to those who would be found faithful. In Luke 12, in verse 35, he uses this illustration, this parable about this servant who would find himself very happy at the end of his assignment. And then in the same verse, there's the flip side. We'll talk about this first one. He says, let your waist be girded and your lamps burning, and you yourselves be like men who wait for the master when he'll return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you, he'll gird himself and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. Now, what this practically means is that there's going to be the opportunity, overarching, but also I find micro versions of this in seasons and in events throughout life, that the Lord says, here's this thing that I want you to do. In this instance, he wanted his servants to be waiting at the door. It's not a super hard task to do. Probably the only thing standing in your way is getting bored or distracted or falling asleep. Those are probably the only things standing in your way of fulfilling this specific calling. But he set these people in order and said, I want you to be ready. I want you to be listening so that when I knock at the door, open. Seems pretty straightforward. There are some things that stand in the way. But the amount of blessing, here's what I'm getting at. The unproportional return on this investment that these people are about to get is incredible. And I believe that this will play out in many ways, in circumstances and seasons, but in the overarching way that we position our lives. So he says that if you do this, if you stand by the door and you have your light ready, and you open the door when I knock, here's what I'm going to do for you. I am going to gird myself. I'm going to sit down and eat with you. And this was not the typical thing that masters would do with their servants. I'm going to sit down and eat with you, and I'm going to come and serve you. There's going to be an amount of blessing that is incredible. there's going to be an amount of return on the investment that is unproportional. There's going to be sizable return for the investment, and it's all about being in obedience. One of the things that I marveled at the way that this plays out so many times is earlier in the age of our girls, we have 7, 6, 4, and 1-year-olds. Early in the older two's upbringing, one of the things that I saw was just the premium that the Lord set, the focus that the Lord set on obedience, and I wanted to place that as a value in our home, and I didn't know any other way to say obedience to a 1 and 2-year-old other than say good listener. And so I kind of developed this kid-friendly language, and I tied these three things to it, doing it completely, quickly, and with a good attitude. And I've found that has guided my own life in so many ways to be able to find myself in the position of, Lord, you said to do this thing. You want me doing this thing. I want to do it quickly. I want to do it completely, and I want to have a good attitude about it. And I know that there will be amazing return for it. So all of those things as a backdrop, one of the things that I wanted to do, I've actually got some handouts. If I could get a handout passed out, thank you guys so much for helping with that. There's this tool that is used commonly. I mean, it's not unique to us at all. It is commonly used in the business world and in ministry and things. But there's this document that basically looks at the overarching, the general guiding principles of your life, breaks them down into some measurable goals, and then helps put a plan into your daily life so that your daily life aligns with some of these shorter term goals unto fulfilling this guiding principle of your life. Now, what I want us to do is I want to actually give us a little bit of time. We've got about 10 minutes left. I want to explain this document and then give you the opportunity to kind of get it started. I'm not passing out pens or anything like that. You've got excuse me. If you've got a pen, you're welcome to start filling some of this stuff out. But I want to give you examples, and I'm going to use myself as something to look at as a potential way to position this document. Use this as a tool in the coming days as we turn over from 2018 to 2019. If you've already got some of this laid out, I'd encourage you to revisit it and see where your measurables are in alignment or not. So I put that passage from Colossians 1:9, just talking about the blessing that is available and the ability to know God's will. So life vision, life goals, short-term goals. And I put a little bit, this is my own description of kind of what these things mean. These are guiding principles, your life vision, life goals. These are the measurable indicators that you're living in the spirit of your life vision. And then some short-term goals to be able to bridge your current reality and your life vision. And then you can even go one step further and begin to lay out my daily schedule, my weekly schedule, my monthly schedule is going to look like this to be able to set me on the trajectory of the short-term goals unto the life goals and unto the life vision. So I want to give you an example. I'm going to use myself as the fodder here. My life vision, when it comes down to it, and I've done this a number of years ago, my life vision, when I was praying about it, Lord, what is my life vision? What do you have for me? What is my calling? What are the things that you have for me? What are just the things that are in the Bible of a believer, someone who follows Jesus, should be doing this? I mean, a great start is the Sermon on the Mount. If you're just completely starting brand new on this, read through the Sermon on the Mount. You can get a great life vision of some things of how we are supposed to be living in the culture of God's kingdom. But one of the things that, just a sentence or two that came out when I was praying about my life vision, Lord, what is one of the guiding principles of my life? And what I came out with was, I want to love the Lord with all of my heart, soul, mind, and strength. Sounds familiar, right? It's the first and greatest commandment. It's the Shema. It's the calling that God has given to his people throughout the ages. And that is, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, he is one. Love him with everything you have. And then Jesus reiterated it when he was challenged by the Pharisees. What's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so I looked at this and said, Lord, I want to love you with everything that I have. And then I want to love and serve people well. That's what I want to do. This is my life vision. If I could stand before the Lord and he would say to me, you love me well with everything that you had, your reach throughout all of your seasons and circumstances was so evident to me. And then the way that you served and loved people and went out of your way and intentionally just gave the smile, gave the hug, gave the word of encouragement, invested the time and energy to do that, I'm so blessed by that. Well done, good and faithful servant. That's what I want. I've heard it said in some of these things, specifically from the business world, what do you want said of you at your funeral? You know, what do you want people to say, you know, at your eulogy or whatever? It's kind of like not an amazing picture. But when you think about, like, okay, what do I want people to say? And I just took that a step further and say, I'd love for people to say these things about me. But honestly, when it comes down to it, I'm going to stand before the Lord. I'm going to stand before God, and he's going to say something. What would I want him to say in truth? And that's what I want him to say. I want him to say, you loved well. You loved me well. You received my love. You gave it back to me. And then you reached out to others. So that's an example of a life vision. Now, one of the things that I would encourage you as you're figuring out what your life vision is these things, this vision for your life will not be tied to a job, to many circumstantial things that have to align. This is something that you, when I think about this, one of the things I thought about was, if I got in a horrible accident and was maimed and became a quadriplegic, could I still do this? Yeah, I could. If I lost my vision, could I do this? I could. If I was on my deathbed, could I do this? I absolutely could. How much more I'm able to do this with all my faculties. So that's an example of life vision. So then how does that break down? I've got some life goals, and I'll share three with you as an example. These are measurable indicators now this isn't necessarily like something that I could chart on a bar graph or anything like that, but when I think about measurable indicators, one of the things that I really want is, and again, this is in the vein of my life vision, is when I grow old, I want to have meaningful relationships with my wife and kids. That's what I want. It's a goal in my life to have meaningful relationships. I don't want to just talk about work and the weather with my family. I want to have meaningful shared experience, history with each other. I want to be able to do that. That's part of that loving well. One of the other things is I want to be able to have built up those around me in teaching the Bible, in leading others in prayer and in worship. That's another goal of mine that I can see helping others and serving them well, and that it actually aligns into. And I love the way that this lined up for me personally, because it ends up being the first and greatest commandment and then the second commandment that's just like it, and that is loving others as yourself. But I find this goal of mine to help disciple others in those in those three things, in the teaching of the word, in prayer, and in worship. And I see that as a life goal. And then a third is to be able to equip others to do the same. And so not only to help disciple, but to help others become disciplers as well. So those are three life goals of mine. And then the short-term goals, and I won't go into those for the sake of brevity here so we can wrap things up. But the short-term goals are the bridge between those things. So one of the things, I'll just share one of them. One of the things was I wanted to learn an instrument so that I could lead in worship. So a couple years ago, I started practicing piano, and I'm learning, and I get lots and lots of practice being able to be at the prayer room. I get lots of hours being able to sit at the piano and just play, but that's a real short-term goal to be able to do it. So if leading someone in teaching the Bible is one of your goals, you had better spend some time reading the Word and getting to know the Word. If showing people, you know, how to do X, Y, and Z, you had really better align your schedule and your short-term goals to be able to do those things. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap that up because it's pretty self-explanatory of how that breaks down. But what I want to do is go ahead and wrap this up. But I really want to give us the ability to sit before the Lord in prayer, and we'll take like 2-3 minutes to do that, to get us started on this, on using this tool and positioning ourselves for the Lord. So I'm going to pray.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.